Welcome to the Great Awakening Ministry. I am Minister and Yogini Joanne Lee. And on this week's show, we have Tanith Carey. Tanith is a parenting and psychology author known for translating the latest research into clear, accessible, and practical advice for families. As well as being a psychotherapeutic counsellor, studying for her master's in Gestalt psychotherapy, she has written 12 parenting books for children, ranging from babies to teenagers, published in more than 40 languages. Tanith's work addresses some of the most pressing challenges facing modern parents, grandparents, and carers, offering evidence-based actionable solutions on issues ranging from school pressure to children's friendships and emotional well-being. She has co-authored her first book, What's My Child Thinking? And this success led to the series of follow-ups, What's My Tween Thinking? And What's My Teenager Thinking? And most recently, What's My Baby Thinking? Together, these titles have become trusted go-to reference guides for parents worldwide, distilling complex child psychology into practical, easy-to-understand insights they can use in the moment when they need them. Her other books are In the Friendship Maze, How to Help Your Child Navigate Their Way to Positive, Happier Friendships. This draws on the latest social science to demystify children's social relationships.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hello, Tanith. Welcome. Welcome to the Great Awakening Show.
Thank you.
Thank you for the work you do with all the babies and the tweens and the teenagers. It's so important at this time.
Absolutely.
So I've got lots of questions, and I've got four children. Yeah, they're all teenagers, they're all past their teenage stage, thank goodness. But it can be very, very difficult. And I'm so pleased that you've written all of these books to help us. But in the first place, could you just please explain why our young people are struggling so much with their mental health? I think this is one of the most critical times at this time. Why is it time that it's just, I know there's so much bombardment from so many things, but just tell us why they are struggling so much.
So it's not that teens are less resilient. I think it's just that they're carrying so much more. Particularly in this country, they are in a system where they are consistently measured, assessed, and compared. This has been the outcome of governments just seeing children as commodities, as economic foot soldiers, particularly the changes that happened about 15, 20 years ago, which were really meant to put the UK, I don't know how global your audience is, but put the UK higher up the global education tables. And so I think that we miss that our children in the UK are the most tested in the entire world, publicly tested. And so they very quickly get the message that they're not good enough. So I mean, obviously there will be some people who some kids who do succeed, but that will be at such a high cost to themselves because they'll go into perfectionism and overachievement. But then a lot of other children just feel like they're not shaping up to these really unrealistic kind of measures that they're expected to stick to.
Yes.
I think what we have is an accumulation of that, and I think we've all lost perspective. And then what happens is also the parents are also panicked by the education system and told that their children are not doing enough. I think that we really need to refocus on what skills we want our children to come out of their childhood with, because I think it's gone badly.
That's so true. I think the curriculum is so outdated. It hasn't been changed for 100 years, and they put every one of our children in the same box when they all have they all have different ways and freedom of expression which they want to release, you know, and they all have different passions and different ways of you know, different talents, but they're all just lumped together at such a young age. When I think that it should at a young age, before they even get to secondary school, it should be they should be infiltrated into their strengths and their weaknesses and their talents and
Exactly.
their passions, to follow their passion and to be able to, because children who are creative might hate mathematics, and just because of that, they can't pass it, and then it holds them back, and then they feel failure.
Exactly. Absolutely. I'm so with you on that. I mean, one of my central parenting values is identifying your child's spark. And spark is the thing that every child has. It's the thing that they are drawn to naturally, even if parents didn't get involved. You'll see it very early on in the way they play, what they're fascinated with. And they have this natural talent. Like every child has one or two natural talents. And just to identify that and nurture that and let that grow without becoming over-involved, I think that is one of the biggest protections we can offer our children against this. I mean, I think what we've done, I think, as you correctly identify, is that we've stopped seeing our children as individuals. They're
Definitely.
just kind of chess pieces in a to make the schools look good, to make the teachers look good, to make the local authorities look good, to make the government look good. I mean, they're not being seen for their authentic selves.
That's right. And also, sometimes, afraid to say it, to make the parents look good. The parents put so much pressure. Oh, my daughter's going to be a humanitarian, human rights lawyer. Does she really want to do that? Or is it you who want her to go into that? It's that's the pressure as well. Making maybe sometimes parents want, oh, I didn't, I always wanted to do it, and my daughter can do it. That's making their dream come true. Pushing our children into things that they just don't want to do as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, somewhere along the way, we started to see our children as reflections of our success.
Yes.
And it's really important that we work out what is our stuff and what is their stuff.
Yes, that's really
Definitely.
important, I think, for parenting. And how can parents help their teenagers, through mental health problems? We've got lots of different ways, haven't we? We've got school pressure, we've got negative friendships, we've got, the social media today, is can be really bad, and the social conditioning of that, the grooming of that, it's just that you've got to be, really careful about what you allow your children to do. So there's so many different ways that, this can lead to depression and emotional, difficulties with children. How can parents help their children through this?
So I think the main principle for that is to stay present, to see your child who they authentically are and be with them, meet them in that moment, be in the here and now with them. I think that so many parents turn into life coaches because they get panicked by the school system. So what happens is that they feel that they have to constantly cajole, push, nag, and all the rest of it. What happens then is that young people then start to close down. They start to protect themselves because children are already self-critical in this highly comparative school system. So to get that as well from the people who are supposed to love you for who you are, is incredibly painful. So I think presence and being with and not trying to fix and really celebrating your child for who they are. I mean, I'm really with a concept called primary parental delight, which is showing your children that you absolutely delight in them,
That's
that you are
lovely.
so thrilled. Exactly.
That's beautiful.
You are so thrilled that they're here with you on the planet, that you like them, you love them, and you love spending time. But unfortunately, as we say in Gestalt therapy, which is the therapy I'm trained in, is that other stuff gets in the way.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think also a really big part of it is that what I've learned by bringing up four children basically on my own is that to give them yourself. To give them your time, your presence, but your true, honest self, to hold space for them. Because so many, and to tell them about all the mistakes and everything that you've done in your life. Because if you can't tell your children everything, most things, then they're going to go out there thinking the world is just like wonderful and all these things. No, we have to be, give them our authentic self. It's the one thing that we can give. Give of yourself, not give of money, not give of anything, you know, because many parents think, oh, just give them loads of money, they'll be okay. That's the worst. You've got to give of yourself, give them your soul. Be their confident. Allow them to want to talk to you know, and express themselves and their worries and their fears and their, you know, I think that's what I've done.
That's wonderful, Joanne. And I've done the same because I mean, it's like it's all about authenticity, isn't it? I mean, in Gestalt therapy, which is the modality that I do, as I say, it's like it is all about like what, when you come into the world, who is the authentic person that you were meant to be? And I think that what happens for ourselves and our children is that we allow other stuff to get in the way. And Gestalt is about finding your way back to that authentic self. And I think raising a child who can be authentic with themselves is such a great gift, that they are enough, that they've arrived whole, and
Yeah.
we don't fill them with what we call intro-jects like shoulds and woulds. And I mean, obviously, if you want your child to hold your hand when you cross the street, but like how many of these shoulds and woulds are actually based in what they need, or actually in what kind of society needs from them, and to
Exactly.
separate the two.
And I think in schools and in parenting, we don't praise enough. We criticize too much, especially school. School and teachers, they do not praise enough, you know. I think that is the worst thing, because we're even just a little thing that, you know, I remember something that happened to me in primary school. You know, I'm 58 and it's like so many years ago. And just because of that awful way that that teacher, it was just an honest thing, you know, she made me feel so small. She made me feel so ridiculous in front of all the class. That really made me feel self-conscious for so many years. Just from that little thing.
Absolutely.
It's
I know. I'm the same age as you, Joanne, and I can still remember things that my teacher said to me. So how come we have teachers who are interacting with our young people who aren't more psychologically informed about development? Because those voices become their inner voices. And
that's
they can be incredible, and they start to form a child's self-belief. And like as a therapist, in training, like I've got a lot of clients, and it's like they are still dealing with things they were told when they were like 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, which are
Exactly.
very hard to dislodge because they can't work out what is the voice, what was the voice of the caregiver or the teacher or the parent, and is that actually it starts to become their inner voice.
Yes.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It does, because the more you say that to your child, I think, you know, like it's such a critical time. You know, the early childhood, especially around about 7 years old, you know, all that time, they like absorb everything like a sponge and they emulate us. And if you keep telling your child, You've got to do better. You're not good enough. You've got to do better. You're not good enough. That's going to go into their psyche and they're going to go, I'm not good enough. I've got to do better. It's the negative self-talk that has been taught to them from their caregiver, from the teacher, from the parent, you know?
No, I totally see that in my clients. It's heartbreaking, you know. I'll see women our age who are still really battling with those feelings, I am not good enough. And that starts to kind of bubble into sort of every area of their lives, you know. And it's just, it's, it can be undone, but it takes a lot of work. Like, let's not create that, those inner voices to begin with. Let's be incredibly sensitive around the messages we send our children about what is important and who they are.
And praise. And how can
I think noticing. I mean, praise, I think kids, it has to be authentic praise. I think it has to be really carefully observed. It has to be aligned. I think if you praise a child,
worthy praise.
Absolutely.
And boundaries as well. I'm sorry. You know, I've had to be the mother and the father a lot through this, for four children, three girls, one boy. And I love, yes, tell them all the time, but boundaries, no. So many parents I've seen, they don't say no. They don't have, that, you know, we have to set that boundary. No, but not just say no. Tell them why. Explain. Sit them down. This is why this is beneficial for you. You know, this is why this is not beneficial for you. You know, the right and the wrong way of doing and living in society is very important, because otherwise children will just grow up and be allowed to think that they can just do what they want. And that's what gets them into trouble.
But I think passing on your values, as long as you've worked out your values first,
That's true.
Yeah, absolutely. Because there's a lot of societal influence and a lot of messages that they get from the wider culture, which we have to kind of, we have to be the firm centre for them.
Oh, that social media is really, I think, in a good way, it's good, but I think it's overtaking their, you know, it's become their parent, really, in a way. It's become their go-to, because they can't talk to their parents, they can't talk to their children, they can't talk to their pastor, whatever, you know, so they go to social media, and I think that's, you know, sad, because all these, you know, they're just, I think it's such a big influence. They've got to be careful.
I mean, one of my favorite things is to remind parents that actually, I think when you see a child like glued to their phone, you think, oh, you feel shut out, you feel rejected. But in fact, sometimes children slip into social media because it's a world that they can control, where they don't feel criticized, where they can wander where they want. But actually, they do want to spend time with you. And I think if you frame screen-free time as a treat and you do it together and not a deprivation, I think that can go a long way. Like, let's do this together, let's take some time together, let's notice how much better we feel, how much we notice more of the world around us. I think that's a different approach.
Definitely. Because, you know, you see when you go out for dinner, some parents, they've got their children, they've got their screens, and they're sitting at dinner and the mother and the father are talking, and the children on the screens. It's like, when I go out for dinner, no one's allowed their chat, their phone, even in the house. No.
Yeah.
It's time for us to be present. It's time for us to talk. Yeah. I think it's become, an easy way of parenting, isn't it? Just stick them in front of the screen.
Well, I think also what's happened is that the parents have become incredibly stressed, like, over the last few generations, because generally we don't get, like, you know, children were really traditionally raised in tribes by intergenerational members of the family and the community, and what's happened is that it's been left to very stressed parents who are trying to do it all themselves. So that stress becomes contagious, because the parents become more controlling, more anxious, but also more in need of respite. So I think that they just kind of, but it's a kind of sign that the parents are overloaded and don't know how to connect and have lost authentic contact with their children. So
I think grandparents around are really important. You know, as you said, we used to be in the tribes, you know. My children grew up in Italy and we had my parents around, and it was wonderful. You know, they had that father there from the grandparents, and I think it's important. I
Absolutely.
think the grandparents can actually be better parents than parents sometimes, because the parents are so busy
Yeah.
with everything. But and when you're a grandparent, you're like, wow, I can actually teach my grandchild all the things that I wanted to teach my child, but I couldn't because I didn't have the time. It's so,
Yeah.
in a way.
Grandparents are such an under-recognized resource for well-being. I mean, quite a lot of research on just having a couple of like one or two primary attachment figures in grandparents is incredibly helpful for a child's self-esteem. And I had quite a traumatic childhood, and one of the things that kept me through was the love and constancy of my grandmother.
Yeah.
But like, again, society has kind of done a kind of honest, I think somewhere in the 50s, 60s, 70s, we got the idea that, like, oh, the grandparents, it wasn't really their role. They should leave the parents to it. I don't know quite why that happened. I mean, something shifted, like, oh, if a grandparent was to help out with childcare, that was doing a favor rather than a kind of, it was, this is like, if you bring a child into the world and then they have their own children, that you are all part of the same kind of tribe and community. So I think that there needs to be maybe a recalibration of that idea.
Definitely. It has to go back to the, as you said, the tribe. That's how we've always lived, and the
Exactly.
parents helping out. It's the grandparents helping out is really, really important. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And it's good for them. If you look at the research, like, grandparents who are really involved in their grandparents' lives, they have better mental health, better longevity, all kinds of things. So, the benefits are really multi-directional on the parents, the children, and the grandparents. So,
Definitely, definitely, and that's why you look at Italy. Yeah, they all live together in one great big house. All the bills are shared,
absolutely.
everything. And I think this thing about you've got to have separate houses and everything. No, I
Yeah.
lived with my parents. We had separate houses, but you're in one house. But it was so much better, And then when the children are 18, they've got to you throw them out. And do, no, like, we should all be living and being together as much and helping the next generation bring up the babies. They need that elder
Yeah.
wisdom, that the mother and the father cannot give, because they're maybe just children, and young old adults themselves. So we need the wisdom of the elders.
Absolutely, Joanne. I couldn't agree with
It's so true.
you more.
So I just wanted to ask you this as well. How do parents maintain their connection with their teenager when things get tough, and especially if there is neurodiversity in their family? Please explain this to our audience.
Yeah, absolutely. So having a child with neurodiversity throws up a whole new set of challenges. I talk from experience here. It's basically, again, about children with neurodiversity often come feeling very shamed by the school system because they're more challenging to teach often. They don't fit in the boxes.
Special needs,
They
children
may.
with special needs, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. So I think what it is really important to do with an ADHD child is really, I think, regulation. It is also to calm your own nervous system, because obviously they can, like, for example, if you have an ADHD child, they can get dysregulated and more emotional much more quickly, which draws on your resources. So, I mean, I think that I think also what's happened in parenting is that we've said, oh, don't blame the parents. I'm not saying I don't blame the parents, but it does start with the parents and our ability to self-regulate and stay calm in those most challenging situations, and to be aware of our nervous system, our breathing, to ground ourselves so that we are able to meet special needs children where they are, because they will become, there's so much rejection and alienation in the school system that we need to be their firm, their grounding, their secure base, even more than other children.
Yes, in
So
my
I think it starts with the nervous system. I mean, basically, I think we talk so much about brain development in children. We don't talk enough of stuff about how their nervous systems are developing, and like how a calm nervous system in a parent is also contagious and also basically sets the example for a child, and the ability to kind of be with, not to try and fix, but to listen, to be present, is just an incredibly, I think it's a forgotten skill, because I think in this very stressful parenting environment we live, we kind of rush to fix. We're like, oh, well, if you do this, this will happen, or don't do that because, but like instead of like, we need to listen to our children first. And I mean, really listen and be present. And I think that that is, I think often we're just too rushed to do that.
Yes, and I really like what you said because, as a yoga teacher for many, many years, spiritual teacher, I believe we are here to master our thoughts, feelings, words, and emotions. Yeah. And not be so reactive. And it's all about the inner transformation. And if you or parents don't do the work on themselves and calm their self, their thoughts, feelings,
Exactly.
words, and actions, you're going to react to that child in a harsh, negative or just offish way. And even if you don't react, just the tone of your voice. Children are very
Yeah.
sensitive. They're spiritual beings. They, have been born quicker than, and they're sensitive. They can feel that energy. They can feel that emotional, spiritual, that tone. They can feel it so much. So it's really important for us to do the work on ourselves
Yeah.
to be better parents and calmer
Totally.
parents and master our negative reactions and things like that. It's tough.
And to that point, I mean, our children are constantly scanning us for cues of safety. I mean, we are their safety. I mean, babies come into the world completely powerless. Like, we are how they survive, So even, the first time you meet your baby, it will be scanning your face. And that doesn't change. And we know from the research that children can interpret even very negative expressions, sorry, every very neutral expressions as negative. So to really kind of, you're right. I mean, children are great awareness bringers, aren't they? I mean, I've learned so much from my children. But awareness of what that brings up for us, from our own childhood, the unfinished business that we may need to address before we take responsibility for bringing another human into the world so that we don't pass on. I mean, I'm a very big one for kind of cycle breaking. And there's been a lot of ancestral trauma that's been passed down, or a lot of received unhelpful ideas. To kind of stand up to those, or to kind of name them first, become aware of them, and then decide to do something different.
That is so true, because if we don't do the work on ourselves, we pass it on. It's like baggage, isn't it? And we pass it on to
Absolutely.
the next generation, and they have to go through it. And it is from the ancestral, the DNA that we carry. It's there. It's, in yoga terms, we call it a samskara. It's like the scars of the ancestors that keep on being played out again and again. And sometimes we don't even realize, why we are doing it. But if you look into your parents and your grandparents' lives, you can see it's the same pattern. So we have to stop it. We have to become the zero point, and we have to do that inner work, and not pass it onwards.
I so agree with that. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's so important, so important. And what are parents missing when supporting their teens? And how can parents help them become whole? Authentic, the whole authentic people, that they are going to be and destined to be.
Absolutely. I think it is about, as you say, not passing on the shoulds and the woulds, seeing them as individuals, noticing what they're drawn to, what they're interested in. I mean, I just really think that we're in a society where we kind of think we have to send our children off to university. We have to think, but like, I think that there's a change happening where basically we encourage them to kind of find the skills in looking after the earth, growing things, making things. I mean, how did we become such intellectual snobs where we think everyone has to have a degree? I mean, that has divorced us from the very things that made humans kind of give humans their equilibrium, which is like, exercise, working with the earth, growing things,
Yes.
being out of nature. I mean, I think giving those essential grounding things which humans have always needed, or restoring those things, or giving them time to do that and time to explore who they are themselves. Because I think this society has encouraged us not to trust our children.
Yes.
Think that we have to tell them everything, but children are kind of self-regulating beings. They like, if you look at the ancient tribes, the parents aren't all over them the whole time. They're learning together in parallel with older children and adults, and we're just over-involved. We're always trying to kind of teach something, whereas if you give a child a chance to explore, they also find, like, den building, being out in nature, they find their own feelings of competence, and competence feels confidence. But if we just keep measuring them about, oh, what's your SATs grade, then of course they're going to feel.
And also, that's so true. Getting a degree. What about a degree in life? A degree in spiritual values, a degree in being of service to humanity, helping the world, helping the human humanity. And that, to me, making your child and creating that environment for them to be a talented, kind-hearted person who's going to be service to humanity is better than any degree you could ever imagine to get your. I'm sorry, but it's true. What about degree in nature and helping the planet and helping, we've got to get back to that conscious parenting, conscious teaching, getting back to what we've survived all this time. Many, it's like they don't teach the correct things in school. They teach history and repetitive, remembering these numbers, which are totally irrelevant. You're never going to need that in everyday normal life, at all. We should be learning. There should be like life coach classes where they teach, spiritual values and opening bank accounts and all these different things that you can use, in real life about how to be a good person and be of service to humanity. This is the most important thing.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
The station that makes you feel good.
I think awareness is the greatest thing we can offer our children. Aware, if we are aware of ourselves and our motivations and our process, and to talk through that, then I've seen this in my own children. By being honest about my own process, they also learn to be honest about their own process, why they do things, what's influencing, what's really happening for them. That kind of self-intelligence, that interception, that noticing what's happening in the body, like, how often do we actually ask our children to tune into what are you actually feeling at this moment? What happened for you before you said that to your friend, or what happened when your friend said to that? What happened? Because, we are not, it's not just our brains, it's our whole bodies, And I think we've lost touch with the body. And I think, giving our children emotion words so that they can articulate their feelings, never shaming them for their feelings, telling them that all feelings are welcome, showing them all feelings are welcome, so important. I mean, so many of my clients are so still living with the shame that their parents gave them by in trying to kind of control them,
That's
you
right.
know, and then shame is a block to authenticity and self-knowledge, you know.
And yes,
So
I've told been how many times have we told not to cry, not to show feelings, not to express love? Yeah. I mean, so you end up bottling all up. And in yogic philosophy, we call it the pain body, you know, because it's all energy and it's stuck in there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, your more and more and more negative memories and feelings, it just becomes so strong you can never release it. And then it's going to come out
Absolutely.
of some weird trauma later on, some weird drama
Exactly.
later on,
Yeah.
you know, if you
Yeah.
don't release it in the moment. Anger is a normal human emotion. And we need it because we need it to say no or to stand up sometimes when things are wrong. Yeah. But as long as you don't stay in it, yeah, and it doesn't overtake you. Yeah. You know,
Absolutely.
all feelings have to be expressed, you know.
Absolutely. And
Right.
all feelings pass. Like I always say as a kind of as a in my therapy is that like one of the greatest human skills is the ability to sit with uncomfortable feelings, feel them in the body and not try to deflect them, deny them, project them onto other people, avoid them, cope with them in unhealthy ways. If we can just teach our children, okay, feel it, okay. It's going to pass. It's like a cloud passing in the sky. It's going to be uncomfortable, but you're processing it. It won't last forever. I mean, that was one of the greatest skills I ever learned as a kind of a as a child. I remember like thinking, okay, this hurts, but I can deal with it, you know?
Yeah.
Because
And
so many adults are just trying to push it away, push things
yes.
away, and that just makes things worse.
No, that's like, you know, we're all going to go through them dark times, the dark night of the soul. Every person on the planet goes through them times. But within that darkness is the seed of light. We have to go in, dig up them things, that darkness, look at it so we can bring it up and embrace it and bring it to the light. That's what I say because it's very important. And we're holistic beings. We have a body, we have a mind, we have emotions, but we also have a spiritual side to us, you know. And we have to understand that we need to be healed holistically as well, you know, and not just be, you know, taken down the road. I mean, so many children, I believe, are on these heavy pills for ADHD and all of this. And I mean, my daughter, she suffered from, you know, really bad psychotic, you know, things going on in her head, hallucinations when she was younger. And I believe she was going through a spiritual awakening. But of course, you know, imagine how many people were thrown into, you know, mental institutions for going through spiritual awakenings years and years, over the years. So, and it was so terrible because we went to the local mental health thing to get help. A year and a half, 2 years later, she'd self-harmed. She'd done everything. It was bad. You know, she took herself to the hospital without us even knowing. You know, it was, and still, 2 years later, she still wasn't diagnosed. She still didn't get any help. And you know what happened? She cured herself. She started going to the gym. She started reading these wonderful books. She's, you know, she met her boyfriend who also was going through trouble. And then, you know, now she's at Fashion University and she doesn't even think about any of that anymore. You know, and I think it was a real letdown by the mental health in, you know, in this country. Because you know what they said to me? And they know what they said to her. I'm sorry. I said to them, so you're telling me she almost has to go and take her life or try to before you're going to put her at the top of the list. Unfortunately, something like that, yes. How awful is this in our
Again,
society?
young people as commodities and numbers and not seen as their individuals they are. Yeah, no, that sounds absolutely really hard.
And
But I mean, it's all
I believe the
that
answer
she.
is not pills and psychotic drugs. I believe the answer is like you, your therapy, talking, you know, being holding space so they can really feel comfortable to release and talk.
Absolutely. And really be heard without censor or fixing or, absolutely. And also we believe in Gestalt is that basically no one can tell you how to live your life. because it's called the paradoxical theory of change, that when you find you come to your own awareness, that's what sticks. No one can tell you what to do because it won't stay. But like when it comes organically out of your own work and your own self-awareness, that's when change happens.
Yes, that is so true. And no one can change you except yourself.
Yeah,
Now we
absolutely.
can, we can all, as a yogini, as a therapist, we can all give the tools and, help, I believe, help that person's sort of like higher self, the healing self within that person, use them to, but ultimately it is us who, instigates it. And we have to realize that there's something for us to heal and
Absolutely.
get out of that delusion, that we're okay, everything's fine, I'm all right. That's what we say in England, isn't it? Well, my child's okay, she's all right.
Yeah. And I mean, also in Gestalt, we believe in organismic self-regulation. Like if the organism, which is us, is given enough support and love and all the rest of it, that we will recalibrate
Self-heal.
by ourselves. Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely, definitely, I
So
believe.
there needs to be more faith in ourselves, more trust in our children, more trust in ourselves, I think. And I mean, awareness is, I think for me, awareness is the main goal, because when you have awareness of what's happening and what's happening for you, then you can start to, and you can name that, and then you can start to make choices. And as an existentialist as well, we have so many more choices than we realize. Sometimes it feels in the kind of very, very oppressive capitalist society that we don't have choice, but we always have choice about what we do with our lives,
It's all we
That's
have free will. We have free will. We have choice. When we wake up in the morning, we can go with our, egoic, negative, destructive thoughts, or we can go with
Yeah.
righteous, beautiful,
Yep. We create our lives more than we
life-enhancing
really.
thoughts. But it's all about the condition. If your child has the right conditions, meaning the good parental influence, the good, school influence, the good religious influence, whatever it is, all the outdoor activities of that condition will inspire that child, as you said, to self-regulate, to self-heal. If it doesn't have the right conditions around it, then it's going to hinder.
Exactly. I mean, in Gestalt, we call it if your child has the right support. Yeah. So we can offer that, which is just our connection, meeting them genuinely. I mean, I think we do have to compensate for what the messages they get at school, which are very kind of critical. So, I mean, I don't think there's anything such thing as a perfect school. There might be some good teachers in that school, but they're also likely to be people who aren't as psychologically informed and want an easier life dealing with children, and they want the children to kind of just to do what they're told,
I think that the school system needs a massive overhaul. I think it's
Yeah.
absolutely
That's
terrible.
not
And the
the purpose.
teachers need to be trained in, I believe,
Yeah.
psychotherapy,
Absolutely.
and mindfulness.
It's
And
insane,
I'm
isn't it?
sorry, and as a yogini, I believe we should have mindfulness,
Yeah.
in schools
Absolutely.
as well as
Absolutely.
psychotherapy, because then they can see all it, the teachers are not holistic. They're just
No.
one-dimensional, and a lot of them, I'm sorry, have very problems themselves, that they have never dealt with. So they get into that
Yeah, I
situation
mean, I
and
think we
under
become a
pressure
lot of
is too much for them.
absolutely. I mean, teachers, like, they're dealing with such kind of new beings. And, like, I mean, I completely understand teachers are under a lot of pressure within the school system, and that's one more thing that's oppressing them. So they're past that, their nervous system isn't particularly calm. I mean, this is all about nervous system regulation, because all of us are on high alert. We're all hypervigilant around each other, and what happens with hypervigilance is all we become controlling. We try to kind of make ourselves feels better. The cortisol levels, in the parents, the kids, the teachers, everything is just running too high, and we know from the research that every sort of mental health disorder comes from consistently high levels of the stress hormone cortisol. So if we can offer our children chances to kind of bring those cortisol levels down on a regular basis, they're going to be in a much better position to deal with this rather kind of stressful field that we're all living in. So I think, That's really important. So that I'm really into making the home a haven.
What do you
You know,
think?
when they come home and they close the door and,
What do you think about homeschooling?
I think
Homeschooling.
it, I completely understand why a lot of people do it.
So do I. I did it. I did it with one of my ch children. Yeah. It was just, yeah.
Well, schools are pressure cookers. They're overwhelming.
It's too much.
And no wonder we've got huge amounts of children who are just refusing to refusing is the wrong word, avoiding going into schools
Yeah.
because they feel measured, judged, criticized. And of course, it's just there. It's not, it's people think it's a choice by the child, but actually, at that point in their development, they are just so overwhelmed, And I think there needs to be a lot more empathy for that because I'm still seeing a lot of kids just being like the parents being blamed.
Yeah.
But actually, it's the field that we're in. It's this school system which has become completely overheated
That's
because,
right.
oh, Britain should be at the top of the school system because of some sort of very outdated ideas. I mean,
That's
why
right.
aren't we?
Is it, and again, conscious schooling, conscious teaching, that's what it is. Conscious, it's got to have a massive overhaul. We're made of mind, body, and spirit, It's like we have to nurture all parts of that in that child. Otherwise, that child will never, if you can't have that creativity and release that freedom of expression, you feel stifled, And many children can't. They can't. So they come out of school and they've got this piece of paper. And what do they do now? What does this piece of paper mean? They don't, they've never learned what their passion is. They've never released their passion. They don't know what they're good at because they've just been told to get maths, get English, do this, do that. Who am I?
Clearly, I mean that their passion might be looking after the environment, it might be working with
Yes.
animals, it might be helping people relate, it might be growing things, it might be making things. These are the core sparks in children, these are the things that we should be valuing, not whether or not they've got this number of A stars and all the rest of it. Because as we know, in the environment we live in, you've got people coming out of, I've just heard the other day, like a parent that their child just of Oxford with a doctorate, they couldn't get a job. So it's like this is not like the children, I think, aren't young people need to create their own lives, I mean, and there's signs that they want something different, they want meaningful work, they want flexibility, they want collaboration, not connection, they want community. Let's encourage that rather than go, well, you go to this university and then so many people are putting their children into law degrees. It's like, well, what is the point of that? Because it's like
They're going to
AI
produce.
is going to like
And
dealing
they
with that
will
in a minute.
be. That is so true. The most important thing is to follow your passion and do what you love. If you do not follow your passion and do what you love, it doesn't matter if you've got 8 law degrees, you will be unhappy for the rest of your life. And then if you're unhappy, how can you make your children have a happy home? How can you be happy and give out to your society or your community? You can't. Because you're not happy with what you've done. You have relinquished your life, your goals, your dreams for your, societies and you're told what to do. You've got to follow your passion. You've got to do what you love. That will make you happy. Well, I just have to say, Tamit, thank you so much for all the work you are doing and all your personal work that you're doing of all of the parents and all the children and all the teenagers, because they need it all at this time. So thank you so much for being on the Great Awakening Show.
Caroline, it was lovely to meet you online.
Lovely, brilliant, wonderful.